Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Center for Science and Culture. The following talk is by Casey Luskin, Research Director of the Center for Science and Culture. Casey will be discussing why the fossil evidence doesn't support the claim that humans evolved from ape-like precursors. This lecture was recorded at a recent Science and Human Origins conference. Here's Mr. Luskin.
Hi, this is Steve Meyer, and I want to thank you for being a regular listener of the ID the Future podcast. We appreciate your interest in intelligent design and the work we're doing to develop the case for the theory of intelligent design. And I'd like to encourage you, if you find these broadcasts edifying, intellectually or otherwise, to become a regular financial supporter of the work of the Center for Science and Culture. You may know that we depend entirely on private donations. We don't get any federal money. We don't get government money for our scientific research program. And if you find the work that we're doing interesting, we'd be awfully grateful if you'd consider becoming a partner in that work by providing whatever you're able to ensure that that work goes forward.
My name is Casey Luskin. I'm the research coordinator at Discovery Institute. And my talk today is going to be focused on how fossils can speak to the question of human origins and where we came from. My background is in earth sciences. I got my bachelor's degree and master's degree from UC San Diego in earth sciences. So I've always had a real love for fossils and the topic of human origins. And so I was really excited a few years ago when Dr. West said that we wanted to put together a book on the topic of human origins. I'd written actually a research paper on the fossil evidence in human origins a few years previously. And so this was a real opportunity 2 years ago in 2012 to update these arguments, to really dig deep into the scientific literature and what it says about human origins from a fossil perspective. So that's what I want to get into with you guys today. So let's jump into this talk. I'm going to go over a few different lines of evidence today from fossils on human origins. We're going to start by just talking about what is the evolutionary viewpoint? What do evolutionists say when it comes to human origins and the fossil record? Secondly, we're going to talk about paleoanthropology and the field of paleoanthropology and how it's a fragmented field. The field of paleoanthropology and how it is fragmented in multiple senses. Then we're going to talk about some of the hype that we see in news articles about hominid fossils. You guys have probably heard and read many news articles in the past saying that they discovered the newest human ancestor, or the latest missing link, as they often put it in the news articles. We're going to talk about this a little bit and how often the case for human evolution is overstated when you read these articles in the media. Then we're going to talk about some of the different fossils that are said to be ancestral to our genus Homo. Who knows what is the name of our species that we belong to? Homo sapiens. Okay, so that's genus Homo and species sapiens. And so there's a number of different species that have been ancestral to our genus Homo. One of them is the genus Australopithecus, and we're going to talk about why that species really does not serve as a good candidate ancestor for our genus Homo. Then we're going to talk about our genus Homo and how it appears abruptly in the fossil record, and then how the various members of the genus Homo really look like they are all very similar. You would call them microevolutionary differences rather than seeing macroevolutionary changes in the fossil record. And of course, all this is based upon our book, Science and Human Origins, which I believe we have available here. So let's first talk about the evolutionary viewpoint. What do evolutionists say when it comes to the fossil record in human origins? There was a question at the end of the last talk about whether we should trust scientists. Well, I spent years studying evolutionary biology at UC San Diego at both the undergraduate and graduate levels. And I had a number of professors who would profess the evolutionary viewpoint to me, and I generally found them to be trustworthy people. And I don't think that they were trying to deceive me in any way. But what I found was that as I learned more and more about evolution, I found that the arguments for evolution tended to be based upon assumptions. And when you went out and you actually studied the literature, you found that there were other scientists who often held other viewpoints, and that their views were also backed by good, strong scientific evidence. So I'll tell you a little story of something that happened to me a few years ago. I don't know if you guys remember this, but in 2009, there was a big debate in the state of Texas over how to teach evolution in Texas public schools. And I had the opportunity to actually go and testify before the Texas State Board of Education about how they should teach evolution. And we, of course, came down and said that students should learn about both the evidence for and against Darwinian evolution. They should not just learn the case for Darwinian theory. They should learn about both sides of the issue, be able to weigh the evidence, and make up their own minds. It seems pretty common sense, but there are actually some folks who stridently disagree with that. One of those was a professor of anthropology at Southern Methodist University named Ronald Wetherington. So Southern Methodist University, a Christian university, you would think, okay, maybe these guys are open-minded and tolerant and willing to hear both sides of this issue. Not. Very much the opposite. Dr. Wetherington came down and adamantly said that students should hear only the evidence for evolution. In fact, he and many of his colleagues were saying that there's no scientific evidence that challenges the standard Darwinian theory of evolution. One of the scientists was even quoted saying there are no weaknesses in the theory of evolution. I mean, this is quite incredible. When you know what's in the technical literature, you know that there are plenty of criticisms of Darwinian theory. But Dr. Wetherington gave some testimony before the State Board of Education. I think it's interesting because it really represents sort of the standard evolutionary viewpoint. I would call this sort of a dumbed-down version of evolutionary theory, but this is what he said to the State Board of Education. And keep in mind, he's an anthropologist, so this is his area of expertise, and he came there and spoke with a lot of authority. So Dr. Wetherington said, human evolution has arguably the most complete sequence of fossil succession of any mammal in the world. There are no gaps, no lack of transitional fossils. So when people talk about the lack of transitional fossils or gap in the fossil record, it absolutely is not true, and it is not true specifically for our own species. And he went on to say that human origins provides, quote, a nice clean example of what Darwin thought was a gradualistic evolutionary change. So I heard this testimony, I thought to myself, well, of course Dr. Wetherington is entitled to his views, and I have every reason to believe that he believes what he said. I mean, I think that he, in good faith, was saying what he thought to be the case. But I know that there are a lot of other scientists who would take great exception with Dr. Wetherington's arguments and his views, and would say that actually there are huge gaps in the hominid fossil record, that there actually are some major gaps and lack of transitional fossils precisely in some of the most crucial parts of the record where we see the appearance of our genus Homo and really human-like members of the fossil record. So we're going to talk about that today, but first let's go on and look at the standard evolutionary view. This is called a phylogenetic tree that tries to organize fossils according to how they're supposedly related in evolutionary terms. So we have here in the bottom left supposedly some of the earliest members of the lineage, the hominid lineage, that led to human beings. And so we'll talk about just a couple of these today. This is Sahelanthropus chadensis. This is Aurorantugensis. This is Ardipithecus. You might have heard of these fossils in news articles. And so these are sort of the earliest members of the line that led to humans. And then over time, you then transition into the Australopithecines. We'll talk about these some more, but these are sort of some ape-like species that lived between 1 and 4 million years ago, according to the standard view. And they were directly ancestral, supposedly, to our genus Homo. Then, according to the standard view, you have this transitional species called Homo habilis, which was a transitional link between the Australopithecines and members of the genus Homo. And then here you have the rest of Homo, which would be like Neanderthals or Homo erectus. And then, of course, our species up here, Homo sapiens. I'm not saying I agree with this view, but this is the standard evolutionary view that's taught in countless textbooks and coffee table books and Discovery Channel specials. This is what you will hear. And so we're going to find out that there's a lot wrong with this view. In fact, specifically, one of the most glaring problems with this view is that hominid fossils generally fit into two special and very distinct categories. And those would be ape-like species and human-like species with a large unbridged gap between them. And when you go into the technical literature, you actually find that this gap between the ape-like species in the fossil record and the human-like ones, this gap is readily acknowledged in the technical literature. You're not going to hear about it when you have evolutionary anthropologists testifying before state boards of education they need to indoctrinate students in evolution. They don't admit it there, but you will find it admitted in the technical literature. You just have to go there and find it. So we're going to talk about that a little bit today. So before we go on, though, I kind of threw out this jargony term here of a hominid, and I think we all have a very rough idea of what a hominid is, but what is sort of the scientific definition of a hominid? Well, it turns out that depending on who you ask, there's all kinds of different definitions of hominid in the scientific literature. It's actually a term that's used in different ways, which often leads to confusion. But we're going to follow today some of the leading scientists, the way they use the term hominid, which I think is what most of us think of when we think of hominids. This is a phylogenetic tree that shows family hominidae. That's one way of defining a hominid, which would be humans, that's Homo, and all the great apes and all of our relatives leading back to our supposedly most recent common ancestors. So here we have Pan, which represents chimps, gorilla, which of course is gorillas, Pongo, which represents orangutans. So according to some, a hominid would be all of these organisms, living great apes, human beings, and all of our ancestors leading back to our most recent common ancestor. But it's also used, this term hominid, to simply mean the line that led to human beings from our most recent common ancestor with chimps. So here's chimps right here. This would be our most recent common ancestor with chimps. And then everything on the line that led to human beings would be called a hominid or a hominin. This is another standard way of using the term hominid. And this is the way we're going to use this term today. So that's what a hominid is for our purposes this morning.
This lecture was recorded at a Science and Human Origins conference in the fall of 2014. The conference featured John West, Casey Luskin, Ann Gager, and Rick Sternberg talking about the fossil, genetic, and social issues surrounding the debate over human origins. We will be featuring these speakers on future episodes of ID the Future. For more information, please visit idthefuture.com. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2014. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.